New legislation is making its way through Congress that would effectively ban TikTok in the United States, forcing the app's parent company to either sell to another company or shutter U.S. operations. But the public backlash is also growing to this latest excess of the anti-China campaign, the new McCarthyism. We need a new system. We need a new society. We need to demand that which may have sounded impossible even a few weeks ago, but is not only realizable, but an imperative necessity. We are very excited to have Professor Richard Wolff join us for a regular weekly segment where we talk about the biggest stories related to the economy, the state of the working class, and the crimes of big business. I'm your host, Brian Becker. The Socialist Program brings you content several days a week thanks to the support of our patrons at patreon.com/thesocialistprogram. We appreciate all of your support and encourage you to become a patron today if you enjoy listening to this show. Richard Wolff is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work. He's the author of many books, the latest being The Sickness is the System When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. Be sure to check out all of his work at rdwolff.com. That's rdwolff.com. Professor Wolff, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Brian. Glad to be here.
Well, we're very happy you're with us again, Richard. The new McCarthyism, the anti-China campaign reaching truly demented levels, a true hysteria. But that's true about the last witch hunt, too, the one in 1946, 47, 48. You know, the House of Un-American Activities Committee wasn't getting that much traction in their anti-communist crusade until they could start to target Hollywood. And then the Hollywood 10 case, the famous directors, writers, editors, and screen actors taken down, and that guaranteed the committee lots of publicity. The reason I'm mentioning it, Richard, is a lot of this is driven by these opportunist politicians, Democrat and Republican alike, who are trying to get lots of attention for themselves by showing that they're the ones standing up to China, that they're going to prevent China or a Chinese company, ByteDance is the parent company to TikTok, from garnering information of Americans, and there are 170 million TikTok users. They're going to protect the country, Richard. They're going to protect the country from the evil communists. And at the same time, the Chinese Communist Party-led government said a year ago when the same thing was brewing in Congress, No company will be sold from China unless it conforms to Chinese legislation affecting such sales, meaning that they're very likely to not permit TikTok to be sold if, in fact, that's the demand from Congress. There are several U.S. technology companies that are dying to buy TikTok if they can be forced to sell. The Chinese government is saying no. Anyway, this seemingly ridiculous story, I mean, it is truly ridiculous at one level, could in fact become something quite big. Anyway, I want to get your take.
Yeah, there are a number of things going on here, and they need to all be at least understood. Nobody knows exactly how much importance each of them has, but they all play some kind of role. You've mentioned one, obviously. It's wonderful free publicity for whatever congressman or woman or senator for that matter or anybody else who can get some time in the television lights for saying something stupid about China, because that seems to be what they're interested in doing. So that's one of it. Here's another one. There are all kinds of competitors. TikTok is extremely successful. Just to give you one personal example, I'm a college teacher. I've been a college teacher all my life. My students in colleges now talk about TikTok the way they once talked about Facebook. Facebook has faded from at least my students' lives almost totally, and TikTok is the exciting, it's not the only one, but it is the most talked about among college students that I encounter, and that's been true for at least the last year and a half to 2 years. So there are competitors, other companies that are trying to do the same thing or would like to do the same thing or would like to buy a piece of TikTok if it were forced to sell, or all of TikTok if they could get up the money. It will be very expensive. And that's part of what's going on here. They are very eager, these companies, to use the government to help them. And if they can help the government denounce TikTok for some security reason, and that's what the government likes to give, they don't care. You make up any reason you want. What they're interested in doing is getting a competitive advantage without paying for it, having the government do the work for them at no cost to them. Now, that's certainly going on here. Then you have the grandstanding of President Trump. He wants to denounce Facebook because he feels they took him off the air after January 6th, which they did, and he wants to punish them. That's who he is. That's how he functions. So he upended the Republican Party, which was eager to denounce TikTok because it looks good in the anti-Chinese, bash the Chinese politics. But he upended them, his fellow Republicans, by coming out to support TikTok because he saw that Facebook would be the winner, or could be the winner, if TikTok were in fact shut down. So you got him coming in with his particular agenda heading into the election later this year. And then there's finally the fact that TikTok is a platform for young people. Young people are very much not supporters of Mr. Trump. He would like to change that, to position himself as the protector, savior of TikTok at a time when others, even though they're in his same party, are criticizing it. Well, then that's a little plus that he can pull off, a little stunt that his public relations advisors probably told him would be a good move. Beyond that, here it is, one more dimension. There is a large effort going on in the United States to do something that is almost certain to fail. And that is to somehow put the genie back into the bottle, to somehow undo the competitive gains that the People's Republic of China has made over the last 30 to 40 years. This is the fastest growing economy in the world, and it has been for almost all of that time. Right now, India, for the last year or two, has had better growth statistics, but both of them, India and China, are far ahead of the United States. There was one version of the State of the Union message President Biden gave in which he said something that sounded close to, we are the fastest growing, or we are the most successful economy in the world. That has not been true for a long time. The Chinese have outgrown us for the last generation. Not 1 year, not 5 years, not 10 years, a generation, 25 years of more rapid growth. And why do I bring that up? Because they are becoming dominant everywhere. TikTok is the latest explosive success after Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and it is Chinese, and that's the wind, the way it's blowing. I mean, I've just finished doing a little piece on automobiles. The BYD Corporation. Many Americans haven't heard of it yet. That's the major producer of cars in China. This last year, for example, it sold more electric vehicles than Tesla did, which was the number one before. They have a new small car, very efficient, that they're selling around the world, get ready now, for $11,400. It's already sweeping across Europe. It is going to come here. It is only blocked from the United States because of a 27.5% tariff that is imposed on those cars. Otherwise, they'd be here already and wiping the floor with the competition from the likes of General Motors or Ford. I mean, this is happening across the board. The great new aircraft producer is a Chinese company, which is rising in the world market in the same way that Boeing is collapsing in the world market. It's just, it's everywhere. And the attempt of the United States to hold it back will be no more successful than the efforts of the British to hold back the United States in the 19th and 20th centuries. And, you know, we can't do it. It's not a practical project. If, in fact, you block cheap Chinese cars, or for that matter, successful Chinese internet platforms and programs, then those will just exist everywhere else in the world, and they'll make the rest of the world able to produce more cheaply, more effectively than we can here. We're protecting our markets with the atrophy that we have learned to understand comes when you don't actually have real competition among producers. So this is all part, yes, of a reversion to McCarthyism and cheap shot political gamesmanship. But the problem is, we are not in the world of the 1940s. We are not an overwhelmingly powerful West and a small, beleaguered Soviet Union. We are in a situation where already in the world, and this statistic cannot be overstated, the G7, that's the United States and its major allies, Canada, Japan, Germany, France, Italy, and Britain, they together are about 28, 29% of the total output of goods and services, whereas the People's Republic of China and its allies, known as the BRICS, are now about 33% of the world's output. In other words, that other block, of which China is the core, is already a bigger, richer phenomena than the United States and its allies. Under those circumstances, cheap shot politics and protecting your little industries is a recipe for decline, which is what we're experiencing, not a recipe for success.
Richard, I'm glad you talked about the different component elements of this story, and each of them is actually quite significant by itself. The point that you're making at the end here, that China, no matter what the U.S. does with TikTok, the repression against Chinese industry, Chinese science, that's not going to succeed. The number of STEM graduates from Chinese universities, science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM graduates, it's doubled what exists in the United States. And in a couple of years, it'll be tripled. At the same time, the U.S. is not investing in infrastructure for a lot of different reasons. And even now, Richard, when Biden passed his like sort of infrastructure bill, got it through, it was premised really on the motivation that we have to compete with China. Not that we have to make America's infrastructure better. It has to be better so as to compete with China. There's this story about chips, about semiconductor chips. And of course, the U.S. has now banned the sale of semiconductor chips, advanced chips, to Chinese companies, thinking that this will thwart, you know, the forward progress China is making in high tech. And of course, also trying to bring technology which had been offshored, you know, sent to other countries because they could pay lower wages. The capitalist, American capitalist, could pay overseas workers a lower wage. They're now trying to get some of that technology back. Now, here's a story from Phoenix, Richard. U.S. chip makers don't have enough workers. Biden hopes a new $5 billion plan will help. I want to read a little bit to you. This is about a plant that was created because of this anti-China campaign in Arizona, in Phoenix. Chip makers are struggling to get enough Americans trained for the positions needed to keep pace with the growing demand. The Biden administration on Friday announced its latest efforts to alleviate the problem, and then it talks about the $5 billion that's going to go to a, quote, public-private consortium, meaning a giveaway to capitalists. A key part of the mission of this National Semiconductor Technology Center, NSTC, would be to stand up a workforce center of excellence funded with hundreds of millions of these dollars. And then the Secretary of Commerce talks about how she can't overestimate the importance of it. Anyway, the bottom line is, Richard, when the factory opened, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company was brought with lots of incentives to set up shop in Phoenix. They needed to hire 1,000 workers capable of doing the job, and they can't find the 1,000 workers. This is the United States of America, supposedly the richest country in the world, the great leader of capitalism. I mean, this is where things are really at, and also an indicator of where they are going.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about that story, in my mind, is to juxtapose it with the remarkable collapse of the public education system of the United States. And by collapse, I mean everything from elementary school up through high school and then into the public colleges. I want to remind everyone that the public education system, right on through college, educates the overwhelming majority of American students. We do not have a private school system. For the majority of people, we have a public school system, which means it is funded by public money, or it in part at the level of college and totally in the elementary and high school segments. And if you do not fund it adequately, which we don't, and by that I mean programs for the equipment in the school, programs for the quality of the rooms and the air conditioning and the meals that are served, and paying the proper teachers in the proper quantity to do education, you can cleverly get elected by lowering taxes on rich people and not mentioning that by doing so, you're underfunding schools. But then it comes back to bite you in the rear end when you get a story like this, like you've spent a fortune bribing companies to locate here in the United States for them only to discover that you are not generating the educated labor force which is needed, especially by high-tech industry producers, because they themselves are high-tech in their production structure. So, you know, this is a society that is geared to profit making for the top 10% of the people, and everything is sacrificed for that. And that doesn't work. Sooner or later, you have undercut your own wealth when you behave in that way. It's the oldest lesson rich people have to learn over and over again, that if you're rich and you're surrounded by people who aren't, your wealth isn't secure. It's going one way or another to be redistributed out from under you. And here you have it again, the government undertaking something that's not going to work because they don't have the labor force. You know, it's just, it's extraordinary. The ability of this society not to learn these lessons, which its own history and that of the rest of the world presents to them every day for them to learn from. It's a testimony to narrow-sightedness. And in the longer historical sweep, when you see this much self-destructive behavior, when you see a system shooting itself in the foot like this, when we tell these stories, whether it be TikTok or the electric vehicle import business or the computer chip fiasco in Phoenix, you're looking at an economic system that is in decline. It doesn't work. It doesn't know how to face or recognize, let alone deal with, its own decline. And one big reason is it can't face it. We live in a society where the word denial is now drowning everything else.
I want to also just help our audience remember and look up some of these stories. The Chinese government is not going to sit idly by. I said that in the beginning of the interview. But the Chinese Commerce Ministry spokeswoman said at a news conference that China would, quote, firmly oppose the sale of the app, meaning TikTok. And she said forcing such a transaction, quote, would seriously undermine the confidence of investors from various countries, including China, to invest in the United States. Richard, that's not an unimportant issue. I mean, the U.S. government is using national security as a pretext to try to help American technology companies in their competition for market share, you know, with Chinese tech companies. The same with the electric vehicles. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, they were laughing at them, laughing at BDY. They were laughing and saying, look, that company is just such a mess. It's not going anywhere. Elon Musk is seen in this video, this YouTube video that's making the rounds right now, just laughing hilariously when a Chinese host says to him, do you think that this company, this Chinese company, will ever be a competitor with Tesla? And he breaks out into this like uproarious laughter. He can't stop himself. But here we are just a little bit later, and the Chinese have overcome Tesla in terms of competition, playing by the rules of capitalism. Even though it's a Communist Party-led government, they're functioning within the world market, and the world market is a decidedly capitalist world market. So they're playing by capitalist rules. And then the U.S. says uses national security as a pretext to help American companies overcome the competition. But here you have the Chinese government too, Richard, which is saying, look, this would seriously undermine confidence of investors who might be investing in the United States. That's because China has invested pretty heavily in the United States, including in U.S. securities. I mean, to the tune of trillions of dollars. If the Chinese ever pulled out, that would actually be the collapse, the real collapse of American capitalism.
Well, yes, and let's expand on this point. Somewhere between, depending on how you count, between 40 and 50% of the goods that come from China are produced in China, yes, by Chinese workers, yes, but in companies that are subsidiaries of American corporations. The Chinese could decide at any point to play exactly the same game that is being played by the United States. In other words, they could say such and such a company, a subsidiary of General Motors that exists in China, or General Electric that exists in China, and so on, are a security threat because they are owned by the Americans who are brandishing the Seventh Fleet in the Pacific. Okay, and then they can do to those American companies exactly what is done by the U.S. government to these Chinese companies, which will then damage both societies. But now let me remind you, China and its allies are now a bigger, richer component. They can take these losses better than the United States and its allies can. That's what's so radically different from what was the case in the 1940s or for most of the last half century. And therefore, you're in trouble. And you're now also in trouble with other countries. What's to prevent European countries from playing this same game with American subsidiaries or American companies that are functioning there? The United States is more spread out over the world than it has ever been. The American economy is more dependent on the performance of its subsidiaries overseas than it has ever been. Do you really want to inspire, to lead the world in coming down on foreign companies doing business there? That's going to hurt Americans disproportionately. In other words, it's so short-sighted to imagine that only you can play this game. Nobody else can. This is no longer the case. The world isn't behind with the United States, the great colossus that is everywhere. It's not like that anymore. And you have the feeling that the leadership of the United States keeps making horrific mistakes because it is living 40 years ago when the United States was in a position that it is not anymore. Not only not in relationship to China, but not in relationship to anything else. Here's perhaps the most dramatic example, which is so hard for Americans to get their heads around. the war in Vietnam that the United States entered into was lost by the United States. North Vietnam took over South Vietnam, unified the country under the Communist Party of Vietnam. That was what the war was supposed to prevent. It failed. Then the United States went into Afghanistan, and the Taliban now rule that country. The American intervention failed. The United States went into Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein and to build a regime change. That country is now under the effective influence of its neighbor, Iran, which for the United States is a defeat. And they are being defeated in the Ukraine. They made mistakes. They thought Russia would collapse. They thought they could sanction Russia out of existence. They thought the ruble would disappear. None of those things happened. And they were predicted as certain by everyone from the president on down. These kinds of mistakes of judgment, miscalculations, here and there, of course, everybody does that. We all make mistakes. But there are so many, and they're happening so quickly, one on top of the other, and they're so big that you begin to have to ask the question, is something more basic, something more fundamental going on? And my answer is yes. The United States empire has peaked. It is now in its long-term decline phase, and with it, American capitalism. And we shouldn't be surprised. Capitalism began in England, left England and went to Europe. Then it left Europe and went to North America. Then it left parts of North America, New England, the Midwest, and moved west and south. Capitalism moves, and eventually it will move out of the United States. And that's what it's been doing for the last 40 or 50 years. And the places it went to, we now see China, India, Brazil, and so on, the emerging new dynamic centers of capitalism. It isn't capitalism that has changed. It's just that the United States, which enjoyed the upswing, is now confronted with managing the downswing, and it can't face it at this point, and is therefore making one mistake after another, and smashing TikTok would only be the latest one.
Richard, I want to just go out with help the audience wrap their heads around this point that you're making. At the end of World War II, when all of Europe lay in ruins, as did Japan, the other major capitalist powers, the U.S., which had not had its cities burned down or bombed, the United States constituted, with 4% of the world's population, 4%, 50% of the world's GDP, 50%, meaning one out of every two goods and services produced was in the United States. And that's also at the time when the United States, through Bretton Woods and other mechanisms, had the dollar, which the U.S. Treasury could print, become the world's reserve currency. Today, in 2022, the U.S. share of the world market is 15%. And that's with GDP. If you look at purchasing power parity, which is probably a better measure, it's around 14%. So these numbers indicate that the great privilege and power thus that the United States enjoyed right at the end of World War II over time gives way. And it's sort of natural that it gives way because that was an unusual and artificial situation where the rest of the world was basically destroyed. U.S. capitalism both profited from the war and was able to pick up the pieces. But here we are 75 years later or more, and that world has changed. And the Chinese government is strong. The Russian government is back on its feet. It's no longer led by a communist party. Iran is getting stronger. Vietnam is not a small country. Vietnam is a big country. India, you look around the world has changed. Anyway, we have about a minute left. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, I think that you're also going to see, and it's slow and it's frustrating, but you're going to see a necessary wakening up of the American people. I know it's not happening at the pace many of us would wish, but these things are not so hard to figure out once you open folks' eyes, that is happening. Even this debate over TikTok is showing a lot of young people the need to pay some attention to politics because it could affect something that's really important in their lives. And it's becoming clearer and clearer, the collapse in Ukraine. These things have a way of accumulatively finally getting that aha moment when people recognize something. And I think we're going to be surprised by some of the switches in American politics in the months and years ahead as this understanding begins really to spread in the population.
Richard Wolf is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work. He's the author of many books, the latest being The Sickness is the System: When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. Be sure to check out all of his work at rdwolf.com. That's rdwolff.com. You're listening to The Socialist Program. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Socialist Program with Brian Becker, where we bring you news and views about the world for those who want to change it. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and watch video episodes of our in-depth show, The Real Story, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube with our partner, Breakthrough News. We can only continue our work bringing you high-quality news, analysis, and history with the support of our listeners. Connect with us and become a patron at patreon.com/thesocialistprogram and receive an invitation to participate in an exclusive monthly seminar with Brian Becker.